You're listening to Talking Heads, and this hour on the programme we're continuing our coverage brought to you by PDMS in the run-up to September the 29th's general election. And we're joined in the studio now by candidate for Glenfeibre, Matthew Wadsworth. Good afternoon, Matthew, and welcome to Talking Heads.
Good afternoon, Stu.
It's a big constituency, isn't it, Glenfeibre? And it's a predominantly rural constituency. You're a commercial analyst. You're like the enemy within there, aren't you?
You'd be surprised. There's a huge number of diverse businesses and different types of economics happening in within Glenfeibre. You know, there's the farming industry, which is obviously our backbone and keeps our community running, but there's also high technology businesses like Araxis and St John's, you know, web design solutions, hospitality.
Yes.
You know, there's a bit of everything there.
So you're not being met by pitchforks on the doorstep?
Not yet.
Not yet this time. You're a commercial analyst. I think you work for Barclays, don't you? So what's given you an interest in Manx politics?
Obviously, I live in the Isle of Man. It's where my home is. It's where my family is. So I've got to be interested in my kids' future. We need to move forward a bit and progress our politics to some MHKs with some more business skills to deal with the challenges we've got coming up.
And are you a Manxman or are you a come-over like me?
I'm a stay-over.
You're a stay... That's a better way to call ourselves, isn't it?
My wife's Manx, so...
Yes.
Manx by association.
So, that's fair. And what sort of talents and skills do you think you can bring to government if you're elected?
We need a more robust set of skills to deal with the budget constraints we've got coming up and to be able to challenge some of the legacy processes within government and remove some of those working practices that are ingrained because nobody's ever challenged them before.
But isn't that the nuts and bolts of government? Isn't that the work of the civil service to do that? Shouldn't your job be more a case of guiding?
You should, but if you don't understand the process, you can't guide. You know, you can have somebody come with you to you with a set of figures. If you don't understand how they're made up and the impact of those figures, you can't guide and make decisions in the interest of the whole of the island.
So you need to be able to read the statistics to query them, I suppose.
You do, and you need to be able to challenge the processes and the way that we're working and make sure that the decisions we're making don't have a wider impact so that we're left with problems further down the line because we haven't thought about it.
You're a relatively young man, early 30s, I think.
Yep.
Do you think that you've got the life experience to be a good seasoned politician?
I'm very fortunate that in my working career I've managed to gain quite a lot of experience in different roles at different levels within organisations. So, you know, you can sit at home and be 60 and not do anything and have no experience, or you can go out and see the world.
So. Absolutely true. And I have to say, I've said this to other candidates, you know, I am full of awe that anybody would be prepared to stand up and be counted, because that's effectively what this is about, isn't it?
It is, and we need to be. We've got a lack of accountability at the moment within government. Nobody's prepared to stick their head above the parapet and say, actually, this needs to happen, or I've made this decision. You know, we don't have a workable Freedom of Information Act. You know, there's no accountability and no responsibility at the moment.
Are you on the doorstep at the moment? Are you knocking on doors?
I am working my way around the constituency.
It's a big one as well, so I suppose you've got to wear wellies.
Wearing my shoes, but getting out there.
And what are people saying to you on the doorstep?
It's really good. People are really engaged. They know what's going on. They know the issues that are affecting them. I think we're in a very fortunate position that people do have an opinion and they do want some answers and some accountability and some change.
And are these opinions on local matters in Glenfeibre or are they more national issues?
There's a mix. There is local issues. You know, we're all concerned about what's happening within our communities, but there's more of an awareness of the national issues as well and the issues that are facing the whole of the Isle of Man and our future viability.
Speaking of those, I mean, we've got 5 years that everybody reckons are going to be tough for the Isle of Man. How do you see the next 5 years panning out for us?
It's going to be hard work. We've got to address and face the fact that we've got a substantial cut in income that we've got to deal with, and that means that we've got to balance the books. But it's got to be done in a constructive way, you know, going in and saying we need to cut headcount, we need to reduce budgets. It's got to be done in a controlled way, otherwise we're just going to end up with mayhem and a huge social services bill if we suddenly get rid of everyone.
But doesn't that mean just sort of nibbling away at the edges of the problem? And it's a bit too big a problem to do that, isn't it?
It's not about nibbling away. It's about doing it in a controlled way. So we need to look at the whole picture. We need to systematically go through civil service and government, look at our processes, look at where we're spending money, how we're spending it, and how we can modernise and change that so that we've then pared that down before we start cutting services and looking at where we can save money and make improvements and then rationalise. It's an ongoing process that hasn't happened.
I did some freelance script writing work a few years ago for a company that used the TPS, this Toyota Production System, lean management style, which talks about the fact that anything that doesn't add value to what goes out to the customer at the end of the day is effectively dropped, cut back, and Toyota invented this, I suppose, in the 60s. Do you think that government here needs that kind of approach where we look at everything that we do and decide whether we're doing it properly or not?
We do need that kind of approach, but it's got to be in context and it's got to be balanced, because some of the things that we do might not necessarily add financial value, but they add value to people's lives and our community. So if you look at the one of the issues facing Glenfarne at the moment is the mobile library service. There's been muted points. If the service isn't used, it's going to be cut.
Yeah.
Whether that's factual or not, the issue is that service is there because it provides a social need to members of Glenfarne, and you've got to address those issues in a way that you factor in that sometimes there's a social need rather than a financial need. It's a very delicate balance.
It is, and it's good that, as with respect to a bean counter, you recognise that there are certain things that government's got to do that can't always be addressed by the bottom line.
Yeah, we have to do that. Part of the reason I live on the Isle of Man is the quality of life that we have here. You know, the sense of community and the sense of purpose we have for a common goal, which is a great place to live.
Yes.
And we need to protect that. But we've got to do it by providing a viable future.
Have you got any ideas about where we ought to be saving big chunks of money, or on the other side of the coin, where we can start to make some more money?
I think there's huge savings to be made within government, within our processes, within our purchasing. You know, if you look at social services, adult services, they have a fleet of cars that are used by the staff to ferry people around. Some of them are 14, 15 years old.
Yeah.
We're racking up huge repair bills. And while at the time it doesn't sound like a lot, we need to look at lease hire, or we need to look at some of the other government vehicles that we're selling off after 3 years and moving them around. We also need to grow our economy. We've got to foster an environment where there is growth. And that means looking at not just growth in financial services or one particular sector, but growth that with the new VAT share agreement actually grows our VAT revenue. So do we need to look at specialised manufacturing, for example, and provide effectively reduced business rates or concessions to encourage that growth in our economy?
The incumbents would probably say that that's exactly what they've been doing for the last 10, 15 years. I mean, certainly over the last probably 5 years, I've become aware of the fact that we do a lot more than just rely on the financial sector.
We do, but we need to be a lot more aggressive about how we do that and how we market ourselves. You know, if you look, my brother lives in Singapore. They have a fantastic offshore medical provision in Singapore through private medical and cosmetic surgery and things. You know, the island is ideally placed to offer something similar with all the relative tax incentives to pretty much most of Europe. Now, I'm not saying that's the way to go,
yeah,
but we need to start thinking outside of the box and looking at some of these different industries and doing
sort of become a centre of excellence for something like that.
Yeah.
Anything. It doesn't have to be surgical enhancement.
No, but the island is ideally placed. We are small enough and competitive enough to be able to change and move quite rapidly compared to some of the larger economies in other places. And we need to address that and maximise that, but also in a context where we can say, this isn't working. You know, we've tried it, it's great, but it hasn't worked in the way that we expected, so we're not going to doggedly pursue it just because we don't want to admit that we've made a mistake.
I'm guessing that you've got something in mind when you talk about that.
I look at the high net worth tax cap. You know, it needs reviewing. You know, it was a really good idea. We've tried it. Obviously, trying to get the information to work out whether it's worked or not is quite difficult.
Government says it does. It brings millions into the economy that we wouldn't otherwise get, and there's very little cost.
I would say that you would need to look at the figures of the actual tax take to the economy and what the reduction is from the people that were already resident here over the people that have then left, factoring in the people that have come in and done a balanced look, and talking about bringing money into the economy. You know, there's only so many times that you can spend the same pound and bring it into the economy, and whether the funds would have actually come in anyway is debatable. But it's not just about that. It's not saying that we should just arbitrarily abolish it. What I'm saying is it was implemented. As far as I'm aware, there's not been a review of it.
I think it went up from 100 to 115,000, didn't it?
Right, yeah. But it hasn't looked at what's the actual benefit to the majority of the population, let's be honest. And how are we reviewing that? Does it work? If not, we need to address it. And that doesn't mean you just stop it off, because obviously then people leave. It's got to be done in a controlled way. But we need to just stop saying it's been going on, so let's
I'm not an economist or a politician, but I must admit I do have questions about that. It seems unfair to me that somebody who earns £1 million a year pays the same tax as somebody who earns £10 million a year. That just doesn't seem fair to me.
It's a difficult one, isn't it? Somebody who's got earns £100 million a year, they are going to have more disposable income than somebody that earns £10 million a year. How that's disposed on the island and the benefits to maybe the shipping registry, the aircraft registry that we've got to factor in, you know, it's incredibly complex, but we need to be open and honest about it. And, you know, if it's looking like it's unfair to the majority of the population, we need to explain why we're doing things.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio, brought to you by PDMS.
This is Talking Heads, and we're talking to Matthew Wadsworth, who's the election candidate for Glenfavor. You are standing as a complete independent, I think, aren't you? You're not allied to the Lib Vans or anybody like that?
No, I'm standing as an independent candidate.
Is that because you don't like their policies, or because you think you can do more as an independent?
I think the island's too small for party politics. The Lib Van and Party obviously have their own set of ideas and what they want to promote. I think we're all representing our communities and people that we live in, and you can't necessarily align the needs of Glenfavor with the needs of Peel. It's just not going to happen. It's we don't have common goals for our constituencies, in that we have different needs.
Do you think that we could be more efficient in terms of local authorities as well? Because you say that you don't want to lose the identities of the towns and the villages in the Isle of Man, but it does seem mad to me that we've got all these local authorities in our small island all duplicating services. Do you not think that there are big savings there?
I'm very fortunate. I live in St John's, and the constituency of Glenfavor covers St German commissioners and Patrick commissioners. They are two of the leanest commissioners on the island, with we pay some of the lowest rates. I think they're doing a fantastic job in the provision of services that they provide, and that's reflected in my rates bill.
Okay, you've said in the past that you think we should be more assertive in our relationship with the UK government. They're much bigger than us. They seem to have all the aces in their hand of cards. Do we really have any clout?
We do. We have to stand up for the benefits and the rights of the Isle of Man. If you look through the Foot report into the Crown Dependencies and the review of the Manx taxation system in 010, and the recommendation in there is, if they interfere in our tax affairs, that business and that money isn't going to go to the UK. And yet we need to reiterate that to the UK government, and we need to stand up. There is a huge amount of intellectual knowledge on the island, a huge amount of finance on the island for such a small place.
Yes.
And yeah, we should be proud of that, and we should stand with that behind us and say, we're not going to be pushed around. It's in the island's interest. We are not the UK.
But that's all very well, but I mean, do we actually have a decent position in terms of negotiation? People are constantly saying we should have done more in terms of VAT agreement, we should have done more in terms of the reciprocal health agreement. But do you not actually have to have something in your hand if you're playing poker with somebody like the UK? And do we really have anything? Can we make threats? You know, if they want to do something that's not popular here, can we actually throw anything back at them?
We can throw lots of things back at the UK government. You know, the Isle of Man Health Service spends a considerable amount of money in the UK with treatment that we have done in the UK. It is not beyond our means to say, actually, we will divert all that money into Ireland.
Yes.
Now, that may not be the best thing for our patients and for us as an island, but we need to know what cards that we do have in our hands.
Yeah, that's the kind of thing. I like the idea of that.
Yeah, we need to stand up for ourselves. And we are a small island, but we're a very profitable, very wealthy island. You know, we're not 14 or 16 trillion pounds in debt like the UK. We've got money in reserve.
Yeah.
We don't necessarily need to throw our hands up all the time. And we need to say, actually, it's about
us. Or go to them cap in hand is the other thing. I don't like the idea of us going with a begging bowl to Westminster. I like the idea that we can negotiate with them as equals to an extent.
Yeah.
Good. What about education and healthcare? Because if there are going to be cuts, then I think it's inevitable. Everybody's saying, well, we don't want frontline services to be cut. Isn't it inevitable that they're going to have to be?
We need to get ourselves in a position where we know where we are budgetary-wise. Saying that we're going to protect frontline services, of course it's paramount. You know, I'm incredibly proud of the fact that on the island I don't have to send my kids to a public school system because we have a fantastic state system here. You know, it is fantastic that we don't have to wait 6 hours in A&E to see a doctor, and we need to protect that. And the way we've got to do that is we've got to cut the stuff that we don't need. We've got to look at our IT systems, we've got to look at our purchasing, our central services like HR, you know, our pensions, and look at how we're expending that money and how we can save money there before we just arbitrarily cut services and say this is the easiest way to save money.
And who are going to be the people who make those decisions then?
Ultimately, it's got to be the MHKs that make those decisions. They are accountable to the people.
Based on what? Who's going to go in and do the time and motion surveys to find out who's working and who's not?
I think you'll find if you go into any civil service department at a low level and say, what are the problems? You will get a huge raft of answers from the management to the computers to anything else. What you need is the MHKs and, you know, the civil servants that we pay quite a considerable amount of money to review these and come up with a plan for our government and how we're going to manage this.
I suppose it depends on who you listen to. If you listen to the people on the shop floor, they'll have a very different view, I expect, to the people who are managing them.
They will, but you've got to do it in a way that is positive, and you've got to take those people along with you. If you have a process or something that's happening that people don't understand, it's not going to be done properly, and it's not necessarily adding any value because they don't understand what they're doing. So if there's something in place that needs changing, it needs to change, it's not being done, or it needs explaining on why they're doing it and what the benefit is.
Just looking internationally again, just talking now about our links with the UK and with Europe, do you think that they need to be strengthened or relaxed? Where do you stand on things like abrogation and independence for the Isle of Man?
It's always a difficult and very challenging and emotive subject when you're looking at independence of the Isle of Man. We need to foster our links with Europe, with the UK. We're doing business there, and that's a separate issue to whether we're independent from them. We need stronger working relationships with Westminster. We need stronger working relationships within Europe. There needs to be a greater understanding of the island, our priorities and what we stand for. When it comes to independence, we've got to think very carefully. It's great to shout, you know, we want to be independent, but that's a huge step and a huge impact. You know, if we exit the Common Purse Agreement, how do we then trade in Europe? Because if we go down the Norway model, we've then got to make Norway grants and make contributions that way. So there's costs, and it could end up crippling our economy.
Yeah.
Just for independence. And I'm not saying that's not the right way to go, but we need to go in it with very open minds and a full understanding of what we're talking about.
It sounds as though you've got a fairly glittering career as a commercial analyst. How will you be able to afford to live as a basic MHK? Because with the best will in the world, the chances are that you'll not get a departmental position anytime soon if you're a newly elected member in September.
I'm very fortunate that I have had quite a successful career, so I'm in a position where we can afford to have other sources of income, and we don't have crippling mortgages and things, and I send my wife out to work.
Lucky. Excellent. Yeah, I wish that I could put that picture of your face on the radio. Good. And so what are people saying to you on the doorstep when you're talking to people? You said earlier on that they're interested in both local and national issues. What are the big things?
The big things are the economy, pension provision, and making sure that we keep our communities, you know, that we don't become a bypass for all the new housing in Peel coming through, or, you know, going through to the airport, that people can get on and live their lives. That's what's important to people.
Would you like to see more people move to the Isle of Man? 5 years ago at the general election, a lot of people were concerned about immigration.
It's got to be done in a way that doesn't spoil the quality of life that we have here. The island's economy needs to grow. We need people to grow our economy. It's got to be done in a way that we're bringing people into our community, not just the island as a place to live, bringing people in and sticking them in dormitory towns that aren't involved in local activities. And, you know, I find it fantastic that I live in a close of 12 houses. I know every single one of my neighbours.
Yeah.
You know, we don't want to get into a situation where we're destroying that way of life.
What about public service? Have you got any experience either with the local commissioners, or have you been involved in any voluntary organisations, anything like that?
I've done quite a bit of voluntary work, whether it's part of charity committees, treasurers for various things over the years, and obviously through the bank we have quite an active community involvement, and of course I've been involved in that over the years as well.
Is it daunting, the idea of standing for the House of Keys?
It is a challenge, and, you know, it's a huge responsibility.
Because it's a complete change of career for you, isn't it, if you're elected?
It is. It's a huge responsibility to stand and say, I'm going to represent not just my own interests, but the interests of my neighbours, my friends and the people around me. And that's a lot of accountability and responsibility. But it's also an exciting challenge.
And it's a case of having to learn a whole new set of skills as well. I mean, you'd be constantly in committee meetings and things like that, won't you?
Yes. Anybody who works in an office, and certainly at a certain level, will get used to going in and out of meetings, doing presentations, making decisions, reviewing documents. It's all day-to-day life for a lot of people in their jobs.
And if you're not successful on the 29th, I mean, are Barclays going to keep your job open? Are you going to be able to carry on doing what you're doing?
Yes, I'm very fortunate to have the support of my line management, both on the island and in London as well.
And tell me a little bit about your manifesto. What are the main planks of your campaign?
It's about preserving our quality of life. You know, we need to foster and grow our economy and develop new income streams. We need to change the mindset within government. There isn't as much money sloshing around, so we need to cut back on our expenditure and cut back on how we spend money. We need to look at our Freedom of Information Act. We need to get accountability back into the government and accountability to the electorate.
Don't we need to just elect people to look after our interests, though? Do we need to know, as members of the public, about every decision that's made in every committee meeting?
It's not about knowing about every decision. It's about understanding the reason behind the decision. When you get a frustrated, disenfranchised electorate, it's because of a lack of communication and lack of understanding.
I get the impression from what you've said that you feel that maybe over the last 10 years, maybe government's got a bit bloated, or the civil service has got a little bit bloated. That's probably understandable when times were good, isn't it?
It is, and it's very easy to deal with issues when there's plenty of spare cash around. Actually, then addressing those issues when there isn't money to throw at the problem requires a different mindset and a different way of thinking.
and you're talking about growing the economy. How well do you think the current government's done in growing the economy?
I think over the last few years, there's been some unprecedented financial challenges in the global marketplace. And I think we're very lucky to still have a very small economic growth. I unfortunately think it's more by luck than actual planning. And it's just that we have had a community that have carried on plugging away and working away regardless, rather than any direct intervention from the government.
So you don't think that the present government's been proactive enough, maybe?
I don't think they've been proactive enough.
Reactive to external forces?
Yeah, they haven't had the foresight to maybe deal with some of the changing economic circumstances globally.
We're out of time, Matthew. Tell the people of Glenfarne why they should vote for you on September the 29th.
It's time for a change. It's time for some more practical business aspects within our government, and it's time for a fresh new approach.
It's been lovely talking to you, and thanks very much for coming in. I'm sure we'll talk again before September.
Thanks.